Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
What's up? I'm P.
And we have a special guest for you coming Woo-hoo! Up later in the podcast.
Get excited.
For those of you who have been listening frequently, you know we've been having guests coming on from DC High Volume Batman, which is a DC podcast, adapting directly from the DC comics. So they started off with Batman Year One. They've done Batman Ego, Long Halloween. We had Jason Spezak, who does the voice of Batman, on earlier this week, so you can listen to that in the podcast feed. But coming up is going to be one of the big ones. They're going to do a two-part adaptation of The Killing Joke. Whoa. Chapter one is going to be available for early access subscribers on 12/24, and then it'll wide release on 12/31. It's written by Alan Moore, of course. The art is by Brian Boland for the graphic novel. It is a classic. And for anybody who's read it, you know there's a certain point that the Joker sings a very creepy song about loony, and it's pretty upsetting. Turns out they're going to be doing that song in the podcast in DC High Volume, and we've got the exclusive, first listen. I was very embarrassed that I just did that. Exclusive first listen of Loony here. It is composed by Marcus Pagliaria and his wife, Megan, and the vocals are by the guy who is doing the voice of the Joker, the legendary Troy Baker. So give the exclusive first listen to Loony here, and then come back for a certain voice actor where Pete and I will talk to him. Maybe about the song.
Yeah, maybe we'll bring that up.
When the world is full of care and every headline screams despair, when all is rape, starvation, war, and life is vile, then there's a certain thing I do, which I shall pass along to you, that's always guaranteed to make me smile. I go like a light bulb battered bug, simply loony. Sometimes foam and chew the rug. Mr. Life is swell in a padded cell. It will chase those blues away. You can trade the gloom for a rubber room and injections twice a day. Just go loony. An acid casualty, or a movie, or a preacher on TV. When the human race wears an anxious face, when the bomb hangs overhead, when your kid turns blue, it won't worry you. You can smile and nod instead. When you're you hurt inside, it's certified. And if life should treat you bad, don't
So that was the premiere of Looney, and now we're here with the Looney, the Joker himself, Troy Baker. Troy, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I never thought that, you know, being called Looney would be an appellation that I would aspire to, but now I take it as a wonderful compliment. What a funny thing. I'm weird, and I think that there's... I'm just going to dive straight in.
Yeah, go.
Please. I'm such a nerd about this. It's weird. I've kind of rearranged my studio, but behind me on my shelf there was my copy of Killing Joke, and it to me is one of those seminal compilations. And people always, you know, there's a few things that they always point to where they, you know, this is, you know, yeah, Superman number one or whatever, but like comic books that like really were milestones for fans, but even could have been also entry points and for other people, because it just became this thing that people were talking about. It was this cultural event, right? And I'm so weird because when I, you know, I read this, I was like, was it what came out, 88? So I was like 12 when this thing came out. So I don't remember if I read it right when it came out or a few years later, but I definitely was like, it was this very, I'm in that, you know, volatile, mercurial, pubescent time in my life where I'm like trying to explore these super adult themes, but it's hard for me to get over just like the pure, lovely pornographic visualizations of everything. But I've almost loved the study of this as a piece in the aftermath, like the conversations that have resulted about this book, both from like, you know, Brian and Alan just kind of like giving their own takes on it. It's like, it's this really interesting piece, but I'm weird. There's a huge setup for me to, you thought that I was wandering away from your original premise and I'm not. When I first agreed to sign on to this and they said, let's talk about this song. And I went, let's talk about this song. Because in my mind, this is not canon. And I think I'm probably a loner in this. There is no music.
Mm-hmm.
That to me is creepier.
Yeah.
When someone just starts singing and there's no music. So there's no real indication in the book that there's a needle drop. There's mm-hmm. there's nothing that says all of a sudden we're playing music. It to me is Joker has staged this entire pastiche of horror. Oh, what's on a ride? You need music. And he's providing it. So it's almost this extemporaneous thing as he's coming up with it. And so we got to have this, you know, wonderful conversation back and forth where like, well, what do we do? And they're like, well, we've already decided. So I love that you feel you have agency in this conversation. But as the producers and the directors of this thing, we have a wonderful song written for it. And so when I heard this, I was like, of course it's this showstopper. And obviously me, you know, being a huge fan of Mark and Kevin and watching that iteration as well, I was like, well, how are we going to differentiate ourselves from that? Cause that's a pretty good number too. Number also probably should be the way that not a number.
Either works. Yep, no, they're all no, good. Yeah. You're good.
I'm a child.
we're not editors. No, it's fine.
So yeah, it was one of this thing where I said, I need you to trust me. And we recorded everything for the episode. And then I said, will you just kind of leave me to my own devices? It's a very interesting thing to have someone like as you sing. And it's not something that I'm used to. I'm obviously a musician. I've recorded albums and I'm no stranger to being in a booth for those tasks as well. But this was an interesting one, but I'm glad you guys, all of that to say, I'm glad you guys liked it.
Yes, we did. Well, I wanted to ask you, though, this is not the first time you've sung as the Joker, right? You did Cold Heart on Arkham Origins.
Which was honestly like this, it was an epilogue in the game, but it was honestly very much of an afterthought. When we were recording the game, and we worked on that thing for 2 years solid, and just constantly iterating and tweaking and honing and finding it. And then I can't remember who it was that came up with the idea. Maybe in pause, maybe in someone else. They're like, I think I want to do this thing where he, gee, are you comfortable singing? I'm like, bitch, please. Like, are you comfortable singing as the Joker? And I went, oh, wow.
Yeah.
What does that look like? And to me, we had done such a great job of pointing to the star that is held in the heavens for 30 years and going, everybody inarguably admits these two are the standard. They are the print. And that is not to say that anybody who has come before or after has not also contributed to that. But for me and for a lot of the kids that grew up in the 80s and 90s, man, you could, to any like 35 or 40 year old kid, you could play just the first notes of that wonderful Tim Burton, Danny Elfman score, and instantly we're just like, ah, it just, we're back home from school.
Yeah.
And also, well, I can't remember her name right now, who also did the subsequent score. She scored all of, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm blanking on her name. Google to the rescue. Yep. I'm embarrassing myself.
I'll take a look. You talk. You talk.
My buddy Austin Wintry is screaming at me right now. I'm screaming at me. I can't believe I can't remember her name. The composer who did, she's the one who scored Phantom Menace.
Oh, wow.
Oh my gosh. Anyway. Guess I'm not as much of a nerd as I thought, guys. I'll leave. I'll see myself.
Oh, Shirley Walker.
Shirley Walker. Oh,
yeah, there you go.
Shirley Walker's score, you know, because they scored every episode, and so you never do that anymore. It's just way too cost prohibitive. But they had this beautiful score. So I mean, to me, hearing what Mark and Kevin did is always something like, we can't, we're on rails. Like, we just need to point in this direction. We can bounce, you know, all down the track as we want, but we have to believe that these are the people that we're seeing the, not origins of, but the early iterations of. And I think we did a hell of a job. But that was a fun thing. I was like, can we sing Cold, Cold Heart? And I was like, abso-freaking-lutely. And I've somehow, I don't know how this has worked out, but I've done it in The Last of Us. First did it in BioShock Infinite. I did it in Arkham Origins. I've done it in Death Stranding. I'm now done it in The Killing. It's like this thing where it's like, if Sean Bean's thing is to die in something, my thing is to sing in it, I guess, is kind of,
not
kind
bad.
Of my, yeah. My shtick.
Well, so earlier this week we had Jason Spisak on the podcast, and he...
What a terrible human being.
Awful, awful.
Sorry, you had to suffer.
We had to delete the podcast, honestly. It was that bad.
Just a reprehensible human.
What a Joker thing to say.
He was talking about how he's gotten to develop his Batman from the beginning of the podcast, from the beginning of High Volume to Killing Joke, where it is this more developed Batman, but you're coming in here as Joker, and you're coming in hot for Killing Joke. What are you calling on for this? I mean, obviously you're calling out Mark Hamill, obviously, and you did play him before, like we talked about in Arkham Origins, but is there a different take on the voice here? What's your thought process?
It's funny because a dear friend of mine, Ryan Payton, who we worked on Arkham Shadow together, which is, to me, one of, if you haven't played it, which was kind of a high barrier of entry because you had to have the gear.
Yeah.
In order to play it. But it's one of the best stories in an Arkham game, and it stands shoulder to shoulder with everything else, and I'm really, really proud of it. A late-minute addition was, he was like, hey, we had this idea to throw the Joker in there. And it's funny, because every Batman iteration, the creators are always trying to do two things. They're trying to steer away from no Joker and no Crime Alley. And invariably, you just realize that the story was wonderfully conceived, and it's such a critical component to this character. You have to understand why Crime Alley is important in order to understand not only the genesis, but the evolution of Batman. And then you have to understand who the Joker is, because there's just this very, very thin gray line between the two of them. And I, coming into this, when we first started doing Arkham Shadow, I was like, no Joker, right? We're just doing, I just get to do Harvey Dent and a little bit of Two-Face. They're like, yeah, I'm like, let's go. I'm in. It was like a little bit more Two-Face than we thought. And also we have this idea for doing Joker at the end. So when we started recording all that stuff for Joker, he was like, hey, I went back and I played Arkham Origin. He was like, you sound different. I'm like, baby, that was 10 years ago. And it's funny how, I guess, age really has changed. And you also, what I love is narratively that was built in. If you listen to what Mark sounded like in 1991 versus how he sounded even in Arkham Asylum, there's a difference. Mm-hmm. It's a different human being. And they built that in narratively. And I can listen to who I was originally. And I think that I needed to be younger then. And so it worked in Arkham Origins here. So I feel like over the last 10 years I've had the opportunity to play this character many times now. And I guess I've kind of done my own thing now. And there is this, I'm no longer trying to, hey, do you believe it's Mark Hamill? It doesn't sound just like Mark Hamill. It's now just like, well, this is Troy Baker's Joker. And we hear the Mark Hamill in it. But no one is ever going to be Mark Hamill, ever. And if you've never seen him do it, that's one of the biggest differences. Because you may have seen me do it. I've done it at New York Comic Con. I did it most recently again at New York Comic Con with Jim, which is awesome.
That was great, by the way. I was in the room.
Dude, you have no idea.
What a fun crowd.
I was losing my mind. Because there's just some moments where 2025 is crazy. Within the span of a couple of weeks, I was sitting next to Jim Lee on his podcast, him going, man, you did a great job. I'm like, this is not happening. To then, you know, last year, around this time, as a matter of fact, I was standing on the stage with Harrison Ford. It's just like, if this is a simulation, nobody wake me up. If I swear, if Keanu Reeves go, welcome to the real world, I will punch him in the nose and put me back in. Jack me back in. I am 100% on Joey Pants' side.
I just want to say, just like, not to interrupt what you're saying right now, but you have done so much stuff in your career. You've done so many voices, so many different franchises and things. It's actually very nice to hear you talk as a fanboy about these other people that you're meeting. So. Just very sweet.
While we're in Nerdville, I just wanted to say, huge fan. Thank you for all your work. super, super amazing. Also, because it's this time of year, I just want to say you're not alone. Die Hard is the greatest Christmas movie. And thank 100%. You for, you know, fighting that battle for me and for many others. So thank you for that.
It's not even a battle, man. It's not even a battle. I got to text one of my, you know, my closest friends, Travis Willingham. And it's just that first screenshot. And it's just, you know, when you see Alan Rickman come on, I was like, 'tis the season. It truly is the most wonderful time.
But just to hear you, like, you know, in the retro rewind, like, you name, you know, lines like I do, like a nerd. It just, it's awesome to see somebody who, you know, was us, is doing so well and is killing the game. So it's very, very, very cool to see. All that being said, I want to know, like, is playing the Joker scary? Like, if someone told me, like, hey, you got to play the Joker, I'd be scared of where I would have to go with myself to be able to kind of have the laugh. And is there any part of it that's too dark or too insane?
No. And I think I dive into the, you know, psychosis of it. But to me, Joker isn't scared of himself. Mm. This is why I feel like the Tunnel of Love monologue is the quintessential thesis to who the Joker is. I'm trying to help you. If you'll just stop fighting, if this is what I have to do, I'll do it. But I'm going to prove to you that this is the path. This is the way. I'm going to put, and I can't do it to you, so I'm going to do it to someone that you care about, okay? I'm going to put Gordon through this wonderful little experiment. And you're going to see, he's going to come out on the other side, and he's going to be on my side of things, and we're all going to have a huge laugh about it. And we go, oh my gosh, why have we been fighting each other? Let's just both go crazy together. Who's the insane one? Mm-hmm. You suffered an absolute inhumane horror for a 9-year-old to be witness to your parents' murder. And look what you do to yourself. You run around masked up every night beating up people. What do I do? The same thing. But I'm doing it for a completely different reason. You're fighting this urge that you feel all the time because you want to kill him, but you don't. And you have this arbitrary line that you've drawn for yourself. And I'm letting you know, I'm the eraser. Let me just get rid of that line for you and cross over to the other side. It's way better. So to me, the Joker exists for us to be able to explore our darkest sense of ourselves. So why be afraid of that? Because just as he says there's always an emergency exit, so do we. It's like close the book for a second. Walk out of the booth. Put the controller down. Turn the TV off. Go, okay, woof. Now how grateful that I am that I do have this sense of ability. There's an amazing psychiatrist, and he was actually a technical advisor on Arkham Shadow for us, Dr. Eric Bender. And part of a preparation for shoots was Eric and I would meet at least once a month, if not every 2 weeks, to dive into the scenes and to dive into the psychopathy of like Harvey Dent and who Two-Face is. And he really wanted to lend this credibility so we could have a conversation about what dissociative disorder is and what that actually looks like, what we call schizophrenia. And one of the things that I took was a huge takeaway from the conversation that helped me as not only an actor, but also as a father, is that empathy is not inherent. Empathy is taught. So in order to have a sense of empathy and compassion, we have to teach that. And so when you see people that are sociopathic, they were never taught empathy. There's a disconnect there with that. And so for me, it's understand, in order to appreciate the light, you have to spend time in the dark. So I would love to sit here and tell you that there's this deep, you know, pathos and this process that I do in order to get into the mindset of Joker. But I have the benefit of amazing writers. I have a very trusted and trusting hand of a director. And I am hanging on for dear life. It is just every... Glenn Hansard is one of my favorite musicians. He did The Swell Season. He won an Oscar for his writing and performance in the movie Once. And the reason why I love him so much is... he sings every note of every song as if it's his last. Wow. And if his voice breaks on this note, it will at least be giving it every bit of gusto that he has. And that's how I feel about Joker. It cannot be measured. And when you have someone like Mark Hamill, who's so inherently and innately talented that he can just ride the roller coaster of his own laugh without barely breaking a sweat, cut to me, where it's my screens, mic, and me are covered in my own effort. So it's just one of those things where I'm literally doing the best that I can, and I don't have the ability. There's people that have played. John DiMaggio is another one of those people that I'm just like, his Joker is one of my favorites as well. And he did it in, I've said this before to his face, But he did it for Under the Red Hood, which Jensen Ackles played Red Hood and then goes on to play Batman. Double dipping fool. I understand the irony of me saying that. But he's so good at it. But someone like John DiMaggio comes in after Heath Ledger has just won the Oscar posthumously for doing Joker. And they go, we want you to play Andrea Romano. Goes, we want you to play Joker. He goes, I get to play Joker. It's like, what do I do? And then you look at Spizak, you know? Spizak brings this, I don't understand him. Like, he's genuinely, I've worked with him on so many things, and I've watched him create sounds with his parts of his body that most people don't have. And he's not just one of these guys that does funny voices. He's a deeply committed, passionate artist of an actor. Like, his knowledge of the craft is far more expansive than mine. And he's a vampire. The guy hasn't aged. Like, he's drinking the blood of the innocent. I don't know. It's just, I love Jason.
Yeah. There's another aspect of this role, particularly in The Killing Joke, which is that we get the kind of maybe sort of origin story of the Joker, or at least an unnamed comedian. Sure. Assuming, since I haven't listened to the whole episode, I'm assuming you did the voice there as well. How do you create the connective fiber there, given it's not the Joker, it's not the Joker voice yet, but maybe it will be?
That was a big conversation. And there's a lot of actors that come in and go, what are my lines? And they walk in, they do their thing, and they're out. And that works for them, because editors or directors can go, we know how we can cobble this together. And they were gracious enough to just give us a bucket of takes, and we're good. I'm annoying. because I wanted to have a meeting about this. I wanted to sit and just discuss before the red light goes on. I want to make sure that we're all dialed in, because there's nothing that's more of a speed bump on both sides of the glass than when an actor comes in with their idea of a thing and the director and the producers have their idea of a thing, and that comes colliding viciously on line number one. So I feel like as long as we can, it's kind of the same thing of if you're an F1 fan, the difference between coming in on warm tires and cold tires. It's like, man, we can grab the ground and go. And so I feel like there's, I say this to actors, as often as you can meet with the team, do it. Don't let the only time that you're collaborating with the team be when you're on the red light. I mean, that is just terrible. Barry Sonnenfeld is a great thing. It's like, the worst time to figure it out is when you're on the clock and everybody is staring at you. That's the worst time to do it. So for me, it was like, one of the big conversations was, what are we going to do for the song? And two, what do you guys hear? What do you think of? What are the qualities that you think of when you think about who this unknown character is? And there's been so many things of like hand waving of, well, you know, the acid did this thing to him. And there's all of these things that we can say brought about this. Jack Nicholson, I just watched, I don't know why I've never seen this before, but he did this interview when they were doing Tim Burton's Batman in 89. And there's so many things about Jack Nicholson that I really didn't understand he was bringing to it. I can't wear latex, so they had to come up with a different solution. So they actually had to come up, and they needed to have something that, you know, what's Jack's biggest smile? And then let's put that on top of that. But we need to believe that that's Jack Napier underneath the Joker when we see him. So it doesn't look like, oh, we just put a prosthetic on top of Jack Nicholson. And so for me, it's the same thing with this. It's like, this is our one opportunity for us to be able to have people go, oh no, I didn't realize. Look, obviously the Joaquin Phoenix movie lent itself, you know, there was a lot of stuff that they were pulling from this, also from The Joker, that graphic novel as well. So there's, thankfully, source material that everybody's been, we all come to the same water. This is bourbon. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. everybody may have their own recipe for the mash, but everyone's coming to the same river to get their water. So being able to look at this and go, if you've never watched that movie, or if you've never heard this story, and that to me is one of the best aspects of the Joker, is I don't want one origin story. I want multiple. Yeah. To keep you guessing. I want this guy to be an enigma. But if I can tell you one story that makes you go, oh, I feel sorry for him, now I've done my job. If I can make you feel empathy, if I can make you be on his side for just a second, when you are in the tunnel of love monologue, you can go, he's got a point.
Yeah.
This is a little bit off of what we're talking about, but I wanted to ask you, who is more intense, DC Comics fans or Last of Us fans?
Bro. There's a subsect of DC fans that are particularly within the camp of Snyder that I would say are pretty hardcore. Look, both of them have their apologists and radicalized. But I mean, I look at those and that's what anybody could hope for. Obviously not to the extremity of going out on social media and, you know, saying whatever you want. But at the same time, the goal of everybody who sits down to create something is, can I make you feel something? If it's, I hope I'm famous, or I hope I make a lot of money off of this, or anything that is so just fleeting and ephemeral and volatile and unwarranted and unguaranteed, not guaranteed is a better way to say that, we smell those people out. But it's the one people that, you know, I think of the Confederacy of Dunces and how that book, J.D. Salinger, same thing. Like, think about all these artists that, whether it be writers or painters or directors or even actors, were like, that's the, that? You like that? I had no idea. They just sat down to write. I always say, Paul McCartney did not sit down to write. Paul McCartney did not know that he was writing yesterday when he wrote Yesterday. He was just writing yesterday. And I think that that's all that we can do is we can sit down to try to make something that is of quality, and we do it unapologetically. And most importantly, we do it without fear. We do it in a place of faith. And something that The Last of Us taught me is that Joel has no idea he's in a game. So the second I start going, or if I'm playing the Joker, I hope people accept me as this character. He has no idea that he's being played by an actor. This is a real character. This is a real person in a real moment having a real experience. And the second that I somehow pull myself away from that and start wondering what the marketing is going to be, I'm no longer doing a service to the story. Boy, I danced around that question.
No, that's fine. I threw you in the deep end with that, so that was not fair. So well said, and thank you for answering. I do want to ask you one more, and this is kind of a broad question, just to sort of wrap up here. But you've been in the industry for over 20 years at this point, and obviously things have changed. Sorry to age you. Obviously things have changed dramatically over the time. But for any maybe like younger actors who are particularly interested in breaking in right now, which I know is a very tricky time for a lot of reasons, what tip would you have? I know this is broad, but
there's a great book called The Obstacle Is the Way. And to me, there's, I wish that I had kind of discovered the principles and the tenets of Stoicism a lot earlier, but I don't think that it would have been pearls before swine had I not discovered it when I did. In some ways, I needed to be in my 40s before those things could have taken root, which I think is interesting because Marcus Aurelius started writing this, his compendium meditations, when he was in his 50s. And it was only in the absence of his mentor being gone where he's like, I need to have these conversations. And so it became this catharsis. But the thing that I would tell any actor that's starting off is, number one, some of the best advice that I was given, and this is a pretty good transcendent thing, is express, don't impress. Nobody cares if you can act. Nobody cares. They don't be like, watch this, I can act. Nobody cares. They want to see that character walk through the door. And that doesn't mean you dress up in cosplay as you go into the audition or the session. It just means that there's such, I'm always trying to find a level of authenticity to where it's, I don't know what this guy is like, but I do know what I would look like if I was in that situation. So that's what you get when you hire me. And to be able to approach it from that thing is better. I've also learned to no longer seek for the thing that I'm making to serve me. I am in service to it. I'm not here to get followers or awards, money, anything else. I am in full service to it. So when people go, it's not really fulfilling me, it's like, that's not its purpose. Its purpose is to be fulfilled. Now, there are ways that I can find enjoyment, but go fishing, take up a hobby, but don't let the thing that you're making, how masturbatory is that? No artist ever chiseled out a statue and went, God, now tell me how great I am. It's the best thing. It was Da Vinci who said, you know, when he was making the Pieta, was it Da Vinci or... I think it was Da Vinci. Someone correct me on my art history, whatever. It says, how did you carve the Pieta? He goes, it was easy. I just carved away everything that wasn't Jesus. And it's Da Vinci or Michelangelo was the person who, when he made the David, he was like, he saw the David screaming to him from inside that marble. It's like, I've got to get him out. He's trapped. I need to get him out. And I think that we spend too much time, a lot of advice, I think we spend too much time trying to make the path easier. And the truth is that it's hard. And the truth is it's not for everyone. And the truth is that you have to work really, really hard for this. And that's okay, because on the other side of it, you make something great. And then every once in a while you make something that's not great. But boy, when you get those good ones, when everybody looks around and goes, We made something great, and we did it together, and we did it not in fear, but we did it in faith. It makes every other time worth it. That's what I would tell anybody.
That's awesome.
Love it. Thank you so much, Troy. And yeah, you made something great with The Killing Joke. I can't wait to check it out and for everybody to hear it. Thank you so much for coming on, and congratulations on everything. Hope we see you back as the Joker at some point again in the future.
I would have to do that. Thank you guys for letting me be a part of this conversation. It's been great.
Oh, thank you so much.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.